Film 11 will be back next Friday. So until then, keep watching the screens.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and the services available to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. If you need help connecting with shelter, housing, or other services, please call 211 or go to 211info.org for the most updated information. On this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, we speak with Elijah, who is one of the site managers for the Menlo Park Safe Rest Village in East Portland. Menlo Park Village came about through extensive collaboration and cooperation between the City of Portland and Multnomah County, and it's run by the grassroots organization Cultivate Initiatives. It's a village-style shelter with individual sleeping pods, outdoor gathering spaces, and pet areas, as well as kitchen, shower, and laundry facilities on site. Accessing a safe and supportive shelter can be a critical part of many people's journey from homelessness back into stability. Within the shelter environment, staff provide safety, empowerment, connection to services, and community support to ensure a transformative experience for all participants. Now, we'll hear from one of those staff members, Elijah, a person who experienced homelessness himself and is now a site manager at the Menlo Park Village.
My name's Elijah. I am the AM shelter lead. I started off when we first opened in 2022 as the peer support specialist, and then it was a new space here at the shelter. So it was kind of onboarding and just trying to figure out how things work, and I just kind of moved up the ladder as a lead person, and they kind of opened the position as a, you know, shelter lead or slash supervisor, and I just took on that role because I was already kind of doing it in the first place. Yeah.
So as a peer support specialist, that's you're someone who's been through experienced homelessness. Can you talk about a little bit about your journey and how you got here?
Yes. So so basically, I've been working in recovery. My clean date is 1/17/17. I'm going on 8 years clean. I've been working. I also work a full-time job at Crestview Recovery, inpatient treatment. And through that process, I became certified as a recovery mentor, then certified as a peer support specialist, then moved on to a peer wellness specialist. So I'm certified still in all those three areas. But my experience of 14 years of drug addiction, it got me involved with criminal behaviors, and I was kind of connected to the justice system. Back in 2017, I was facing like a 4-year prison sentence, but they offered me a couple of programs to like navigate back into a living besides going to prison. So they put me in intensive outpatient treatment program along with a drug court program, which was like 14 months long. And through that process, I was able to navigate my health and my recovery. And I just kind of moved through the process of doing that. I graduated, and they kind of cut ties with the justice system, like kind of freed my record, and nothing attached to me, then I could just try to move on with my life. And my first job was Crestview Recovery. I'm a behavioral health technician, and that's just basically helping clients, go through their recovery and help them find a solution to theirs, whatever works for them, but also, you know, encouraging them and, showing them different routes to take and whatever works for them, and helping them navigate the space at Crestview, with the stuff we got going on there. My whole family was involved in drug addiction. I kind of got my family, I kind of drug them through my mess because of their problems. We were literally homeless. I lived on Kelly Butte over here for a couple of years. And then I was just kind of like couch surfed for, 14 years of addiction, 2003 all the way to like 2017. And through that, all that, my whole life just like destructed, loss of family, just all the criminal stuff. And I know I have that lived experience, in homelessness, but also drug addiction. And coming from a program from Crestview, the structure, I was hoping to help implement some of that structure here, because I know all programs have, the changes need to be made for safety and for, just basic transitioning stuff. I know that, so that was all new. So I was able to help work with the stuff we had going on here, but also with our program manager, Sharina, who came on at a later date. But at that time, when she came on, that's when I became the supervisor / shelter lead. And through this process of a year and a half, we've created a program with structure, guidelines, and like a welcome packet, and, basically helping neighbors transition. So that's really why I got into it, is trying to take some structure from that, but also coming from the lived experience of homelessness and addiction, knowing that there is a way out, but people need support and they need help. Because I most definitely did, and I took the help that they offered me, and I was able to change my life. Like I said, like going on almost 8 years clean, and my whole life has changed in that 8 years. Like I, no ties to drug addiction, like in that element. Like I now support other people that have that struggle, and like for me, like my addiction, being homeless and addiction, like fed each other. Like, in the elements, all the weathers and all the things going on out there, the fear of living outside. So only way to get past that emotionally and physically was like I would boost up my usage and to keep my brain occupied to where I didn't have to focus on that stuff. And it was a really hard, my whole 14 years was just all destructed. Like it was all downfall. But today, with going on 8 years clean, I live with my family. We're all, my family's in recovery. My sister's a drug and alcohol counselor. My mom's just retired in mental health. Now all the kids, the nieces and nephew, I'm back to Uncle Eli. So that's just kind of my life journey right now. And through recovery, I have maintained these certifications and helped many people recover, but also in the shelter space, helped individuals navigate the space and transition themselves. Our main goal here is to get people into housing and work on the barriers that are holding them back from housing, whatever that is. And some people's barriers are harder than others, and some people's are less, but you got criminal stuff, you got drug addiction, you just got loss of life, depression, anxiety. And this place here, the Safe Rest Village, is exactly that name, Safe Rest. People come in here, low barrier shelter, and we have 50 units, sleeper units, for them to sleep in. We actually have food vendors. We got real food vendors. Each of them has a piece of the pie in their actual restaurants or, you know, and like one group will do a breakfast and dinner, then the next group will do breakfast and dinner for a couple of days. And so it's basically five, so you got one, two, we got five catering services and they bring it in the morning. So it's real prepared food, and we can also work on their allergies. If anybody has allergies, we can notify that, and then we can have special meals made for them. So they get two meals a day. They get breakfast and dinner. We have housing specialists / case managers, and we got two peer supports. We got Cassidy and Jessica, who now help neighbors. They have like their clientele or their neighbor groups that they work with to help them navigate, you know, health services, drug addiction, whatever services they need to help them transition. Then they also have the housing specialists, which they navigate them into housing and put them on lists for like, you know, other subsidy lists and stuff besides the ones that they might get from here. And basically we just help people transition. So there's like, you got like, and what I see with Cultivate is like people, like they were literally here sheltered in the beginning, got housed, and now they're working full time at the main hub.
Like when someone gets referred here and they come, what can they expect when they show up to this Menlo Park?
Well, when they show up, we do a short first I show them the space, you know, show them the pod space, then I kind of walk them through the village, the shelter, and show them like the things that we provide: bathroom, showers, laundry room, kitchenette, explain the processes, how things work, and what we're trying to do here. And then I do their intake, which is a short packet, and then we go over the welcome packet. We're just trying to, like, normalcy, you know, like there's a place of comfort. They got a unit that has a heater, air conditioning, they got a mini fridge, they got a bed, they got a dresser. Yeah, normal. Yeah, like stabilization, like a place to stabilize, like, you know, getting out of the elements, having a roof over your head, but also having the basic services: food, shower, laundry. You know, neighbors. You know, groups of people that are all trying to do the same thing. You know, get off the streets and get help. But it's basically like, yeah, that stabilization piece, like having a warm place to sleep at night, having a good meal, having services inside the shelter, like showers, but also having our peer supports can help them like navigate the space a little bit. So it's just basically that, you know, first couple of days are sometimes hard, like, but it takes like within like 5 days they'll meet up with their housing specialist and start a case base and see what kind of barriers they're needing to get over. So basically it's just that, you know, it's enclosed, we're locked down, there's nobody coming in. We have cameras around the whole village so we can monitor things as they come. And, you know, they're free to come and go anytime they want. We have an overnight policy, but the gates open. If they have things to do, they have things to do. And basically we give them contact information, we give them the shelter number in case they're out there and they're not going to make it back in the night. They can call us and let us know, so we just kind of know their whereabouts. But when they feel like they're heard and they're, we have dignity and, you know, that we care about them because we, you know, they're now our neighbors, and they're here getting services, so we treat them as such. But what I've seen it over the years is just like, yeah, the people just become like really friendly, and they, you know, they start shedding a lot of those things. And like how I say stabilization is like, I've seen the drug use, people that come in addicted and heavy users have slowly but slid away from like heavy usage and like working on like medically assisted treatment, you know, to help them, because they know that there's, we don't allow it here, and they're caught up in the mess. So we communicate, you know, we have open conversations about getting help, but it's also just like, I see it like shedding, you know, like I can honestly say we've been here 2 years and we've only had one death of an overdose that we didn't catch it in time. But because now we do wellness checks every shift, we have all the safety stuff here, like Narcan and all that stuff, but people know they're not allowed to use in their pod, and they don't want to get wrote up for it, you know, because, you know, if you get too many written warnings or a behavioral contract, you might lose your space. And so we kind of like reel that stuff in with like positive conversations and help and guidance. But we've only had two overdoses in the going over 2 years now, besides the one death. And you don't see it as much. You know, we have our clean needle stations in the bathroom because we know it's going to happen and around the village. But we keep it safe, and we do housekeeping checks once a week, you know, and then we do wellness checks every shift to make sure that somebody's, if they're not accounted for on our sheet, that we can make sure they're okay. But also doing the housekeeping checks to make sure they're in compliance and they're following the housekeeping guidelines and, you know, the basic being in compliance, because, you know, these pods got to stay in compliance, and we have peer support to help them navigate that space. Like, if they're struggling with, like, organization or just not being able to keep it, you know, it's not a lot of space, but it's a livable space, and we got to contain that livable space. So yeah, you see, like, we have an engagement coordinator that comes now, and he does, like, movie nights, bingo, game nights, and we have these other resources, like, other Cultivate's got their things going on, like their shower and stuff like that, and we got a clothing closet up there that they can get, like, clothing requests. You know, so it's just, like, start off slow, and then, you know, you see people slowly but surely start seeing the resources we have, and they start, you know, grabbing onto those things and navigating through this stuff. And people's time of stays is based on how they check in with housing specialists and work on their barriers. You know, some things like criminal stuff, you know, like, I had a really bad criminal background, but it took until somebody gets picked up, and hopefully, and once they get picked up, we find out, and then we can, like, work with the POs and work with the courts as peer supports and be like, you know, understand that we're in a shelter, we can only hold it for a certain amount of time, you know, and it is, you know, confidentiality here, but we kind of work, navigate with what we can. We have an ROI for them to fill out. It'll be a basic ROI so that we can, yeah, so we can contact, like, hospitals, jails, and stuff like that, and try to get any kind of information. So, yeah.
Oh, like, if someone doesn't show up.
Yeah, if they're not here. So, yeah, before we, like, if they're gone for 5 days with no contact, it's pretty much, then we, like, separate. But before we do that, we navigate the system and make sure they're not incarcerated and make sure they're not, like, in the hospital. But that's why we give them our number, you know, that they can call us from the hospital and let us know they're in the hospital. And, like, you know, there's areas that we basically stay in contact with people. And they know that we have people just calling us when they don't have to call us every night, but they just do because they know that they're safe here, and they want us to know that they're safe, and they end up like, they don't want to lose their space, you know, and we don't want them to lose their space. So a lot of the times it's like, basically they start off with, like, documentation first, like, make sure they have ID, birth certificates, and some people's stuff is, like, barriers are bigger than others. Some people have, like, the criminal stuff they got to take care of first. And when they do, for instance, we had a neighbor that was here almost 2 years. And the only thing that was, he had SSI benefit. And the only thing that was holding him back from getting a place was that 3-year warrant on his record. And I was trying to help. I was a peer support at that time, and I was trying to help him just turn himself in, you know, and we can work with the POs and try to, you know, because I know a little, I have a little bit of history of criminal justice, and I know how it works, kind of, and I know the stipulations around certain charges and stuff and how they would look at it. So I tried to help him get brave enough to turn himself in. He was almost there, but then he got caught up in the parking lot. Like, he got caught up by the police, and he got arrested. We found out right away that we got in contact with the courts and the PO, and we found out that he was going to be able, they were going to basically confine all his charges together and then get him new court dates. So that barrier was kind of helped. He got out of jail within, like, 2 weeks. He came back here, but at that time peer supports were able to pick up the paperwork for courts and stuff, and she helped him go to court, in which they ended up dropping one of the charges out in Hillsborough, and they ended up, all the other two charges they brought here to Multnomah County, and right down the street here was his probation officer, and peer supports helped him navigate those first few appointments until they got connected, and then he was housed. And then now the PO has his address, and he had social security, you know, he had the benefits, so now he's in a place that is affordable. When his subsidy runs out, he's in a place that, with his amount of money he gets, he's going to still be able to pay his rent, but now he's in connection with his PO on his own and taking care of that issue. In other cases, some people, you know, especially like their own journey, basically once we get all the barriers cut out of the way that are holding them back from housing, and like people have like rent stuff on their record, some people just have like don't have any rental history, and some people, you know, drug addiction, like I said, like working to getting medically assisted treatment, so then they can, you know. And right now we're building up our workforce. So they have an intern. They're starting to build a intern program just for the SRV. So that's, and we're going to have an employment specialist, an employment manager, and that's going to help people that are here at the SRV are going to be able to get on board with the intern program and get a little bit of money, but also work towards workforce development, like getting a resume and either get connected with full-time employment with Cultivate or navigate some other kind of employment. Because I know that employment's really is a really important piece of that transitional piece, because eventually some funding will run out and you want to be able to, you know, continue paying, and employment's really a necessity in that. So they're building that up, which is really cool. I'd like to be a part, I'm glad I'm a part of that. But yeah, so basically it's just on, based on their, when they, once all their barriers are, you know, navigated through, then the housing specialists will have them on wait list, but then the housing specialists will find places, look for places for them to go check out, and they'll either get approved or denied. And once they're approved, then they kind of work with the funding they have and get them into a place. Last year, I think we housed quite a bit of people. Like, I know it's like probably over 30 people we got, you know, into housing. So it's all based off of a, and like with a growing program, you know, and having a, and now they got like engagement punch cards. They can earn for doing stuff around the village, doing extra stuff like cleaning up and stuff like that. We have advocates, and we got peer supports, and we got shelter leads. And the advocates are like the ground floor people that kind of help navigate the space, keeping it clean, you know, helping check out appliances and stuff like that, and just basically, you know, meeting neighbors where they're at and building that sense of community.
And do you, this is the adult system, so you have mostly single adults. Do you also have couples?
Yeah.
Or?
So, yeah, so how it works is we do single intakes. If there's an established couple on intakes, we still do a single individual intake. And what that means is if they're an established couple on intake, then they can be in the same pod and they can use the other pod for, like, you know, basically like storage, but it's still got to be in the property limits. But that's because if there's a breakup or something happens, then they won't settle with anybody. Somebody can just go to their own pod. And then he does movie night. He comes up. We set up a big screen in the community space. Bingo games. He'll set up bingo. And we also have prizes for winners and stuff like that. And it's just like, so there's a lot of work going into place for the engagement. Like in the summertime, they took a group fishing. You know, he was able to get licenses for some participants that wanted to go fishing. But that's continually increasing. There's going to be more stuff happening. And, you know, that's a real good way to get people out of their pods, you know, and enjoying community. They get beverages every morning too. They get coffee and juice. And
sounds like it's a place that a lot of people would want to be able to come to. I mean, do you end up with a long wait list, or is it hard to get a spot here?
So yeah, basically we don't have a say of who comes in. Basically, it's a street service coordination center. Like, just, you know, we just let them know daily if we had any pod space, and then they'll shuffle through. And they're like the street outreach people, and they meet people out on the streets, and then they write referrals. And I think they each have like a little chunk of the, like, when it's their time, they can bring one of their candidates. So yeah, Cultivate is really doing the wraparound services, like Caleb says, the third way. You know, there's just like people that are drug addicts, homeless, or even mental health issues. They're still real people. They're still people that need a little bit of help, and like employment, navigation, and feeling heard and dignified, and treating people with respect is really necessary. And so, like, Cultivate, you know, there's a lot of people. There's literally people that are living in tents that come and apply for the job and then become employed, but they're still living in their tent, you know. But at the same time, Cultivate's doing this work of, like, building people up because they deserve it, you know. People deserve a second chance. I was given a second chance, and I caught on, so I know that people deserve a second chance or even a third chance, but they need help. You know, there's our city is very high on all the problems, but very low on any of the resources, you know. So the more we pick up the resources, I think the more we can improve on the struggle, you know. And, you know, Cultivate, like, there's that saying, you can't save the world, but you can save a small portion. And that, and their portion right now is on the east side of Portland, because that's the amount of how big the company is, and it's what we can serve right now. And a lot of people are getting positive and healthy services, and it's growing. And I've been here for a little over 2 years, and just since I've been here, I started off with, like, I think there was like 30 employees. Now we have like 80. You know, so it's, everything's expanding. The workforce development, the housing, the shelter, all that stuff is expanding. And so you see the growth, and it's just exciting to be working with this company. When you get people that have been homeless, chronically homeless for 15 years of their life, living in the elements and just, and no support, like, you know, just had to fight for everything they get. But when you meet the person in person and you hear that trauma and you understand it, you know, and you know, you could just say it like this, say some person lost their mother and their father. They have no family in their life. They all died in an accident. Say they died in an accident. understanding, like, being trauma-informed is really important. Like, understanding how they got to that trauma. Not everybody's a drug addict. Not everybody, like, for me, like I said, like, drug addiction, being homeless because I lost a lot of stuff and I hit depression. And the addiction piece, like, took me out of the use of drugs, took me out of the feeling depressed. I never grew up with any depression in my life. I had a stint happen in my life where I lost marriage. That took me on a twine that I couldn't even control, like this depression. I didn't even know how to live my life without this person in my life because I was with her for so long. And then I was introduced to meth, and it took me on this journey of, like, I was able to suppress all those feelings. And so I held on to that because I didn't want to feel that depression or that anxiety in my life. But then that addiction took me on a road that I couldn't control. Like, it just took me on this downward spiral because I became an addict. I became a heavy user. But I was, I did criminal stuff, but morally, I was just messed up. Like, I had a big loss in my life, and I was battling, and I chose drugs and what I shouldn't have. But basically, there's a lot of good people. There's more good people than there is bad people on the street. And then knowing their story and knowing how they got there is really important. You know, like I said, you don't know if this person's family died and they have nobody to connect with. And now they're just like me, surviving out there and like just suppressing it all with drugs, or, you know, and that causes like mental health issues. Like, you know, so many drugs and living in the elements. Like, I caught mental health issues because the drug addiction got me so... It started to suppress me, like, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't control anything in my life without these drugs, and I got tied up in the system, you know, and then it was just like this, then I just started losing everything, you know, and then like I said, I was literally homeless on the Kelly Butte up here with my sister, my dad, and my brother-in-law, and then, my mom, she, her husband died, and so I thought, well, hey, you can try some of this stuff, you know? Because at the time, it was helping with my depression, and so I thought it would help her with hers, not thinking logically. But then my mom got hooked on drugs, and so then, and that helped her push through her depression, but then she had to get help, you know? Even though I was last in line to get help, I finally got help. You know, I surrendered, and I took advice, and I knew I wanted a little bit of life back. And I guarantee you, all these people that are out here on the street, homeless, living in the elements, suffering, they want help. They don't want to be living that way. But we have, like I said, we are very low on the resources and we're very high on the problem. And, you know, a little bit of help goes a long way. And it starts right here. These safe facilities are changing people's lives and saving people's lives. You know, and people are getting housed and Cultivate's got that wraparound service, the homemaking specialist to go and navigate the space and make sure that they're going to continue being able to, you know, make sure their needs are being met while they're in their subsidy or, you know, in that, and then they're going to be able to continue on after everything runs out. Because you don't want to get somebody housed and then have them evicted and have an eviction on their record. So it's really about, and that's why I think they're building up that workforce development, you know, because I understand that employment's very important, you know. When I was in my recovery, I got out of the system after 14 years of it. I had no work history because I didn't work. I was an addict 14 years. I had to go back. I went to Southeast Works, started building up my resume, just started doing some odd, you know, just temporary stuff, just trying to figure out like what I wanted to do for my life. And then I feel like my path was chosen to my lived experience of living in the struggles, now being able to give back to people that are going through the struggle, knowing there's a way out, but you just need support, you know, and a little bit of support, a little bit of respect, you know, and treating people like they deserve to be treated. They can grow as individuals and they can slowly but surely change their lives. And I've seen a lot of lives change in this shelter, and it's amazing.
That was Elijah, one of the staff members with Cultivate Initiatives, who helped manage the Menlo Park Safe Rest Village site, located at Southeast 122nd Avenue and Burnside in Southeast Portland. More information on this alternative shelter and the numerous other shelter options funded and supported by the Joint Office of Homeless Services can be found on our website, johs.us, in the Emergency Shelters section. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland. This podcast is produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department, with funding from the county, the city of Portland, Metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching for Out of the Streets of Portland. And you can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
To KBOO Portland.